Welcome back to another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. I'm Dave Carl, and I'm the pastor of Children and Family Ministries here at Stonebriar Community Church. And I have with me Mrs. Chrissy Smith, who is in charge of all things women, all things important. Chrissy, tell us what you do.
So I serve here as pastoral leader for women. I am on the leadership team with our lead pastors over all the areas of ministry here at the church, and I get to be involved in how ministry impacts women here at Stonebriar and how women serve as a part of that.
And all over the place. Women are everywhere. They're running the church.
67% of our, I think it's 67 or 70% of our congregation are women. So, yeah.
So you don't really have time to be here. You've got stuff to do.
Well, this is part of the investment, okay, right? We got to be talking to not only the moms, but also ultimately the younger girls that are being brought up in the church. The messaging's hugely important.
Well, then just sit tight. All right. And Mrs. Linda Wiley, and you are our ministry leader for high school girls. And, well, what should I have said?
Just high school.
Just high school.
Because boys can talk to me, too.
They, and they do, yes, because you're just that safe. And so today we're going to kind of continue from where we left off the other day. And we have, in the previous session, we have established that relationship is the thing. It's not success. It's really not anything else that you might think could fit into that slot. Our purpose on this planet and for really the rest of eternity is relationship with God and with others. And that's what we are wanting to be about here. That's what we're wanting to train for. And free people up from whatever may be hindering them from having healthy relationships, and that includes with God as well. But we have established also that we've got a generation or two coming up that are especially, uniquely unprepared, inexperienced, and untrained to be able to have healthy relationships. We talked about how technology has played a role in that. So we've kind of set the stage for kind of the problem that we have around us. And we want to talk about what to do with this issue, because this is a boy-girl, this is a boy problem, it's a girl problem, it's a parent problem. And so the setup for our discussion is I wanted to pose a situation, not quite a story, a story-let. But if someone, a kid, for instance, decided that he wanted to become, let's say she, because I'm trying to think about, that she wanted to become, I don't know, say a doctor or an Olympic athlete. This kid, and my brother-in-law actually, he was 10. He decided at 10 he wanted to be a medical doctor.
Wow.
So I don't know how often that happens. School was a very different experience for him. Mm-hmm. He had a goal in mind. Mm-hmm. He knew he was pretty, you know, I'm going to do this. I can't do that because that'll take away from what I wanted. So it was very, to have that decision made at such an early age, mm-hmm, made just a huge difference for him. But so we have a girl who wants to be an Olympic athlete. It would be pretty clear there are things that this girl would never participate in. She would not go eat three pizzas tonight. She would absolutely work out every day. I mean, this is, it wouldn't even be a, she wouldn't need a list. If I want to be good at that, if I want to become that person, there's clear things that I need to do and say no to, mm-hmm, in order to become that person.
And they would have coaches.
And they would know that they're not, they're only going to get so far by themselves.
That's right.
And then they're going to need help. And they want to eventually, if it was athletics or, well, or medicine, mm-hmm, I got to be surrounded by people who are in the same pursuit.
Yeah.
So we can keep
coaches,
each other going.
Tutors, you bet. Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest that there is a similar and similarly rigorous path for the person who wants to be able to have intimate, healthy relationships. That's not going to happen by accident any more than becoming a medical doctor, any more than becoming an Olympic level athlete. There's training, there's stuff that you would never do that would just decimate the relationships around you. You would know you would never say these things or act this way if you knew what you were after, if you were targeting to become a person who could have healthy, intimate relationships. So how does the average person or kid learn? What would be the training regimen for a girl who wants to be able to have healthy, intimate relationships?
Ideally?
Let's start there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think ideally her training would start at home with a relationship with her mom. Even better if she had grandmothers, extended family women who are all desiring that for her, working for that on themselves and in their family relationships, and setting the stage and then pouring the foundation of that. And then, you know, that they would also know where their influence ends and there is an opportunity for others to begin to pour into their daughter. I mean, it is an ultimate reality that in raising a child that at some point they will be looking towards what other people are saying to them and holding it more valuable than what their parents are saying. And so to be looking for women who would want to pour into her and spend time with her, as Lennon was talking about in our earlier podcast, how important and valuable that is, and for mom to be able to recognize that and find ways to cultivate that. Mm-hmm.
So in a less than ideal situation,
yeah,
I'm a 17-year-old girl.
Yep.
I have, my grandma lives on one of the coasts, not near me. Mom's got the job, she's otherwise occupied. I'm kind of on my own. Linda, what do I do?
I think what we tell the kids is, to have a good friend, you have to be a good friend. So I think it really starts with the vulnerability factor. So the way we put it is, if you put yourself out there, kind of like if you're looking for a mentor, if you're thinking about the girls you know, really pray and think about someone that you're drawn to, someone like you or not like you, but someone that you feel connected to, and then pursue them and be willing to be open and honest.
Take risks.
Yes, and to take risks and to know. It's like trying out for a team you're not on. If you don't make the team, you're not any worse off than you were. So why not try? So that's kind of what we say. I mean, if they reject you, it's about them. It's not on you. And really, you've got to be a friend if you want it. So what we've experienced is all these kids are on the outskirts of the room, just waiting for people to come to them. We hear it with the adults too, like, nobody approached me, nobody came talk to me, nobody, well, who are you? Go talk to them. And I know introverts, that's a little bit harder, but you need to want to be what you're wanting in return. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the place we tell the girl to start. And a lot of times we'll role play. And we tell the girls 20 questions. Like, sit down and write yourself 20 questions to start a conversation, because they don't even know how to have a healthy conversation. So if you write out questions that are non-threatening, that something you really want to know about somebody, and you keep it in your purse or your pocket, and you practice those questions, people love to talk about themselves. They just need to be asked the questions, and you need to really want to know the answer. So
I'm 15 years old. Boy or girl, I'm a relationship beginner. I want a relationship badly because I'm lonely. I'm going to go up to someone who is either attractive or seems popular, and I'm going to pour my guts out. And I'm going to get toasted.
Reject.
Then what happens? How do I not get it?
You got to be willing to try again. And like Linda's saying, there has to be some measure of self-reflection in the process.
Yes. and the very nature, though, if I'm not good at relationship, I'm not a well-balanced, I mean, I can't do this well. I can't do anything well until I've gotten some experience at it.
Right.
So
trial and error.
I have gone in too deep, too fast, hopefully somebody would go around and, you know, somebody would have a Linda in their life and say, oh, you went in headlong on that one. You needed, what were they saying? What was their body language? Mm-hmm. Were they interested? I don't know. But there's artistry that's required in relationship, which is one of the reasons why it's so difficult, especially for young boys, is picking up on subtle cues is daunting. And guys are famous for failing in this area.
And that's why things like the pool table or going out and doing an activity where they're more side by side versus girls can
sit in groups.
Yeah. Girls can sit at a coffee table and it works. Guys, they got to be active and moving and share, but that's where we need more adults that can facilitate. They almost need to be brought together and to be shown an example of what a healthy relationship looks like before they know.
Yes.
So, and if that's not at home, then it needs, I would hope the church is a place that we could train mom and dad and kids and moms and dads with their kids.
And I will confess, in fact, that here in Family Ministries, we are shameless about using kids against their parents.
Like to get to the parent?
So if we had a class on how to grow spiritually, nobody would show. So instead, we have a class on how to raise your daughters. And people pack the room. And it's virtually the same material. So the big win, the enormous win would be, and this is what I spend most of my time, is after the parents. We want to help the parents. We want to arm the parents. We want to free the parents to be able to guide their kids to sit at home and have an open conversation. And mom, I just got creamed at school. I wrote a note to a girl and she showed it to everybody and I'm, or now today it would be an email, text. And
they don't even email now.
And then,
they don't.
And then mom will have remembered perhaps a conversation where it's like, okay, you stop. I mean, turn the flames off on the stovetop. But you sit down. You engage. This is a moment that might pass and never come back. She's vulnerable. She's asking. You stop the world and you sit down and you engage with her and ask her questions, perhaps more than anything.
Right, yes. Help her to process. Because girls, almost every girl, needs to learn how to process out loud with another female. Preferably someone wiser. Or older, at least.
Yeah, I was gonna say older.
At least older.
And women, as parents, you know, we do have that visceral reaction when our kids start to tell us something because we feel their pain or, you know, we accidentally gasp or something. So we really need to be praying continually, knowing that a hard conversation is eventually coming, to not panic or react, but to remain calm in the moment. And I do think, and I said this to you earlier, Dave, that our kids are giving us about 10% of their reality. And even if we dig and ask good questions and we think there can't be anything else, we're about 50%. Yeah. They're still about
at
half
best.
That they're not sharing. And I do think that there's some boundaries there that we don't need to know it all, but our kids want us to know more than we think they do. You know, I asked my son, who's 15, if he'd ever gotten a nude, and we talk about pornography. We have a very open family, and he told me no, and the Holy Spirit was like, "You're lying," and I was like, "Foster," and he told me the truth, and it shocked me, and I don't think I really pushed it before because I didn't want to know the answer because I didn't know what to do with the information.
Right.
And then we kept digging and digging, and it didn't become me saying, this is what you're going to do, or I'm taking this. It was like, okay, Foster, how are you going to, you know, let's talk to Dad. Let's come up, you come up with a plan and then come back to me and Dad. And, you know, we're trying to navigate it together, but, you know, he's 15, he's got it with him all the time. He needs to learn to figure it out. But having more men in his life or having boys. So then I asked a group of boys if anyone else had ever gotten one, and everyone said no. And I'm like, huh. But we need to just be able to have open conversations with our children and the youth in our
world. I think the best way to do that as parents is to practice having open conversations with other adults.
Yes.
Right, because then we're better prepared for that kind of information. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to just put our head in the sand and say, well, I don't need to know all that stuff. I'm just doing, you know, what's most important for my family or what we've decided. Mm-hmm. It means you're going to disconnect from what the culture is shoving in their face. And then it reinforces their concept that you don't have any idea of what their reality is.
Right.
Because you don't even know new trends or information, just, you know, top line info for cultural references.
So why ask mom and dad? Because they don't know anything.
Right. And they'll just push you away more, and they'll go to other people. And guaranteed, they are talking about it with someone. Mm-hmm. And like you were acknowledging earlier, if it's not a person in front of them, it's definitely someone online.
Yeah.
And that's how they go inquiring to adults online who are disguised as friends and confidants and people that are experts or have, you know, what they're looking for, what they're wanting. And ultimately, if we're willing to dive into the information ourselves and be able to be around other adults that we can talk about this, this podcast being an example, just to be able to have conversations with other adults who are raising kids, and maybe even better is to have conversations with people who are raising kids just ahead of yours, so that you're getting real-time information, so that, you know, it's not 15, 20 years ago that their kids were your kids' age, but rather not long ago were they dealing with the very same thing. And part of that, to me, is also an assurance and a comfort that we're not in this alone, but we're also not up against something that parents haven't dealt with before.
Right.
And that, you know, they've learned the tools as they've gone through it as a parent. And so I don't know, if you have 10 kids, do you get better at it? I'm not really sure because I don't have 10, but I'm hoping that after that much practice, you'd feel like, I got this down.
I think you're so tired.
I know.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, and if you can have a vulnerable relationship with your parent, then I think that opens a door to have an authentic, real relationship with your peers.
Well, and that will move us into my next topic. And to maintain the metaphor of, if you're going to train to be an athlete or medical doctor, there are things that you do, things that you don't do. I've seen, they're just all movies come out 3 or 4 times a year, and they're usually called romantic comedies.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of this is some ridiculously good-looking guy is a gamer. I don't mean like video game. I mean, he's working.
Player.
You know, yeah,
he's a player.
He's a player.
It has another name, but I can't say
it. So, it's inappropriate.
So, you know, Will Smith, somebody like that, you know, McConaughey, these guys, these are older guys.
Yeah, so dated. Like, come on,
too.
So they are wildly promiscuous. And it's part of why they're famous.
It's part of their charm.
In their neighborhoods and their friends. And they meet a girl, you know, they fall in love with J-Lo or whatever, and he instantly, like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. I've been wildly reckless and promiscuous and using girls like toys, but I found you. Now I'm all better, and it ends in a wedding.
Always.
And the movie ends,
like,
and
weddings.
I'm screaming, don't stay with him.
And we're crying because it was beautiful.
Yes. And the premise there
the
is
wedding. It was
he has trained to be someone who cannot have relationships, is not interested in relationships, and if he did, he's damaged every part of him that could have a healthy relationship, and he's actually trained himself to follow his glands if the wind changes direction. And now this poor girl married him. And, you know, God can do anything, but this marriage is in trouble, like let's just build a house in the middle of a tornado. it would be just as dangerous. And then flip that to girls who have been wildly promiscuous. Mm-hmm. And back to our first example, you know, I'm going to be like this until I'm tired of it or I find the right guy.
Yeah.
And then I'll stop all of this and I will be, you know, honest and true and devoted. Now, they've never practiced any of that.
Right.
So if I wanted to be, and let's flip it from my perspective into yours, if I was a girl that I wanted to be able to have an intimate, healthy relationship with a guy, like what would I do and what would I not do in my teenage years? Not to obey so you don't get in trouble, because we've already determined that you know, they're not afraid of getting caught, but if this was your goal, how would I move toward that?
I think she has to set a moral standard for herself. She has to make decisions about that knowingly, not just happen upon an idea or a trend. So even back when the whole promise ring thing was a big deal, right? And dads were like, okay, I'm going to give this to you so that you... It was his idea, not mm-hmm. hers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So ultimately, we want young girls to make their own moral decisions about who they want to be leading up to that beautiful day of getting married to the guy. And, you know, kind of walk backwards from there and say, how does that progress? And how do you get to decide that? So what matters to you that would make you make that choice? You were acknowledging earlier that you would want your kids to choose to be mm-hmm. a virgin going into marriage. Well, that's got to be, as much as you want that, clearly, that's got to be their choice, right? Mm-hmm. And they have to decide that even when they've been inundated with the benefits mm-hmm. and the impact that makes on their future marriage. You could give them, again, all the information, but ultimately, it intrinsically has to be a moral decision that they make for themselves, because everything else is going to come up against it. It's going to be so right. tested right. that they will find themselves in the midst of it, and they'll struggle with doing it well and not doing it well and have to deal with that. But it's still going to be, you were saying earlier, the North Star, their choice for who they want to become morally, which is, you know, now just this murky water of unknowns. Mm-hmm. We don't even have moral definitions anymore. We don't have moral leaders. Our leaders are not moral. I mean, there's just no direction with that concept anymore. And so to ask a girl who is 15 to make a moral decision mm-hmm. and do it because she feels like that's what she thinks is right is a lot to ask. But that's what you would, you know, if you had the opportunity to tell her that or to mm-hmm. invest in her to begin thinking at that. That goes back to friendships. I think girls do a lot of practicing in their friendships with other girls. And when that goes well, they benefit. And when that doesn't go well, because most often it doesn't, yeah. because of differences, really, and experimenting, then they realize, okay, I can't even have a friendship that is going to take me in the direction of finding an intimate relationship with the right guy, because I can't even pick girlfriends.
And they're just seeking attention. Like, they're just, the ones that are promiscuous are just hurting and just wanting someone to love them. And I do think one thing that we've really tried to focus on is if you've already crossed a line, that you don't have to keep crossing it over yeah. and over yeah. and over.
You get to start over.
Yeah,
you get to do over.
I think mm-hmm. that's what they believe is, well, I've already lost it. Why stop now?
Mm-hmm.
And they're using it to self-medicate. And like I said earlier, it's way more socially acceptable now
sure.
than it ever has been. But I think that knowing, you know, we talk about being married to Jesus right now, like we're married to Jesus, and there's no point in really having a long-term relationship right now if you're not looking to get married. But to date around and to figure out what kind of guy you like, what you're looking for,
to learn about yourself.
Right.
Then to learn about somebody yes. else.
But are you the kind of person that you want to marry?
Mm.
And if you're not, then maybe start focusing on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it is a girl that just can't, like she's just in love and wants to date, then we just try to do check in with accountability. Like, how's that going? What do you have in play to, you know, what kind of boundaries have y'all set? And then I just assume.
Well, and you said, so what would you tell her not to do? I would say don't do whatever other people want you to do and expect to be able to start over later. Because you won't have that chance after a while.
Well, and I'm intrigued by the metaphor that I'm training to become something, again, whether I'm thinking it or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I am studying hard, I have all kinds of opportunities ahead. If I'm not, there's a whole swath of life that is now outside of my reach. Now, I could perhaps start all over and, you know.
Sure.
So you got to, you do get the do-over.
Sure.
But, in my world, talking with guys, and we've had this conversation, so one day you're going to wake up and you're going to be 57 years old. You're going to be in a pretty crappy apartment. You've lost your family. You've lost your wife. You've lost your job. And you're sitting there drinking by yourself. And you say, how did I end up here? This is not what I wanted to be. And you could fairly say, no, you've done this perfectly. You've made 1,000 decisions to end up exactly here.
Mm-hmm.
You just weren't fully aware that you were doing it. So when you were rebuffing your wife's suggestions that you need to get some help, or that you've said, no, I want to exactly end up like that. So someone who is rehearsing not having an intimate relationship, not being able to receive intimacy from somewhere else, because it's, in the alcoholic world, the scariest day in the life of an alcoholic that never frightens them is when their body changes and they kind of celebrate it. It's like, huh, I can handle my liquor now. Mm-hmm. I've gotten really good at this. Well, what actually has happened is your body just switched. And you are now a physiological alcoholic, and the rules have changed. You can't stop by yourself now. There's still redemption, but it's a different path, and it's harder. And I think the same metaphor would play with someone who has had enough reckless sex that one day they say, "Oh, so did he break your heart? No, it didn't mean anything." That's the moment.
Mm-hmm.
When you have come to the place where this most precious, perfect gift from God, so that you can connect spiritually, physically, emotionally with someone, when it gets so abused that you can say with flippantly, it doesn't mean anything. You should panic. But they almost never do.
Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of them are at that point of addiction.
Yeah.
You know, sex addiction. And I think it goes back to the relationship with mom and dad. Like, if your kid is struggling with this, your home needs to be a safe place to talk to your folks about it. But they don't, because they know you're going to freak out, or they're going to. So it's
get
one
in
of
trouble.
Those. Yeah. And I think they're.
Lose their independence, lose their ability to make their own decisions and have their own freedom.
And I think secretly most of them want to get caught. You know, they want deep down for someone to know what's going on, so someone helps them stop, because they're at the point that they can't on their own. And I think that not to cut down dads, but I think pornography is so common that young ladies are finding it on their parents' devices. Yep. Boys are finding it. And so they are learning, if dad thinks this is what women are for,
right,
then that's what I'm for.
Right.
And if nobody in the home has talked about their sexuality, them being a sexual being, not even from a biblical worldview, but just the world, if it's never talked about, then it's shameful. And so I'm going to go ahead and, you know, it has no value. So I think that the relationships at home have got to be more open and authentic. And I'd say the sleeping around is and it makes me feel good that you can look back through the whole Bible and it's always been there. Like yeah. Chrissy said, I mean, it's not anything new, but having it at your fingertips to watch is new. And
to your point, and I am so pleased that I work at a place that I can confidently say, if you're a parent and you found your kid's porn or mm-hmm. your daughter has told you something or you're way in over your head on any topic, you do not have to worry about coming to us mm-hmm. and being shamed for it.
Mm-mm. Right.
This is the waters that we swim in, mm-hmm. and my experience, particularly with men, is that crisis that you didn't ever want to occur is the Holy Spirit coming in and saying,
enough.
I need something to get your attention because mm-hmm. I want to, not because I want to punish you. Mm-mm. I've been waiting for you to let me heal you and you have refused. And this is what has happened. But now I want to heal you. Mm-hmm. I want to heal your child. I want to heal you. I want to heal your marriage. And when that happens, and I've actually seen this, when that happens, that guy starts looking around saying, well, I got three guys that are going through what I just came out of, and they don't know what to do. But now I know.
Yeah.
And they start taking care of guys mm-hmm. that would never maybe even come to a church. They have a ministry of their own mm-hmm. because they have received the Holy Spirit and His healing, which is what God wants, mm-hmm. so that He can have a relationship with us. But if we're choosing self-harming, self-protection, distraction, you can't have a relationship with God or anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I'm just amazed and thrilled and grateful that we are at a place where we're kind of standing at the doors. It looks like we're holding the doors open, but we're really just holding our arms out.
We're watching and waiting,
saying,
for you.
When you're ready, mm-hmm. we're tooled and ready to go. We're limbered up. And it sounds morbid, but I can't wait. I can't wait for you to have a crisis that will draw your attention to God. And ideally, you would say something along the lines of, I've done everything I know to do, and it didn't work. What do you think God might want? Mm-hmm. I'm in all day long for that.
And just the healing that comes from, like, saying it out loud. Like putting the sin into the light and knowing that you don't have to hide it anymore. Just carrying on that burden, even if it's for your child and what they're going through, it's exhausting. And to be a place, you know, might not look it on the outside, but to be a place on the inside where you can come in here and say anything and expect anyone on our staff or our volunteers to be prepared to love you and not judge you or shame you, but to meet you where you're at. And I think that we need to start telling each other that that's what Stonebriar is. Well, you're broken. We want you broken.
Go ahead.
A church where we have received that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we believe it, not because we read it and got the information.
we're not saying it's
but
true.
But because we've experienced it. That's right.
We'll write our book later and tell you guys all of our stuff.
We cannot give away something we have not received.
Yes. And it's a safe place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
safe because we're all acknowledging that that's how God has changed our lives. Not because of any degree we have or some level of authority that someone put us in, but because we have been recipients of that powerful love and the endless grace. I think this church has always been marked by that being our message, and we are demonstrating that powerfully in every aspect, as Linda said, no matter where you come into the church.
Well, on that note, hope that invitation to anyone who is listening who is in over your head, this place is safe. There is a church near you that is safe. Yeah. Now, the first one you go to may not be, but don't quit.
That's right.
You need to find a safe place, and church that ought to be what we're known for. Unfortunately, we've goofed that up, through history. But there is a safe church, and you need to find it. Mm-hmm. So start your journey, and don't stop until you find it, because there are people who want to be with you, have a relationship with you, and point you in your relationship to God. And that's the body of Christ. That's the best part of church.
That's right.
So, well, thanks for joining us for another Parenting Pathway podcast. And as we finish off our day, thank you, Linda Wiley.
My pleasure.
For being with us, and Chrissy Smith, and your wisdom and your winsomeness, both of you. And remember, do not do parenting and do not do life alone. Mm-hmm.